It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Have you made a decision and you're just going to reveal it on Saturday?
Or I would say that I'm very close to making a decision in my own mind, and I'm going to reveal it on Saturday. We have a lot of time. We have nothing but time, especially since we have the support. You know, we have senatorial support. People have come out, and I guess we have all the votes we're going to need. They're going to be very happy with the candidate. They know most of the candidates anyway. I think they know maybe all of the candidates. And we have great support. Great support from the people also.
All right, that was the president in, talking about what his plans are. He's going to be announcing his choice on Saturday. I kind of think it's going to be Amy Coney Barrett, but, you know, that's kind of the indication from people that I'm hearing from. But you know what? The president is so unpredictable. We don't know, do we? But that's the plan. And Mitch McConnell is planning on moving full steam ahead in terms of sending it to the Judiciary Committee. Lindsey Graham has to figure out how exactly their roadmap is going to look. Many people actually are suggesting that the senators in the committee and in the hearing be required to submit their questions in writing instead of having a full open hearing like they've had in the past, which happened with Kavanaugh, where there was such an invasion in the room and such chaos. I don't know what they're going to do, but I do think the intention is to hold this vote before the election, because after the election, Martha McSally will be unseated, I think, the first part of November, and if she does not win, because she was in a special election. So everything's going to change, and the lame duck session is pretty iffy, because the whole calculation changes. If some of these senators have lost, then they won't care about what they do and how they vote, and Mitch McConnell, well, they won't have as much writing on what they decide to do in regard to this nomination. So that's what's happening. It's going to happen, I think, pretty quickly. We're going to watch it unfold. I want to mention one thing. We'll go into this at greater length because certainly you know you'll hear about it. Reuters is reporting and Newsweek reporting that Amy Coney Barrett, who seems to be the top choice right now, at least from all indications, belongs to this cult called People of Praise, which was the story of Handmaid's Tale, that television series that was on, talking about how the women were like mistreated and subjected, and that Amy is part of that cult, and on it goes. Reuters goes into great detail. They have actually two articles. They had an article when she was first vetted in Congress, and then now they've updated their article. I'll talk about it at more length later, but let me just say that Newsweek, using that same tack, that Amy Coney Barrett is part of this cult that was the inspiration for Handmaid's Tale, that novel by Margaret Atwood. Well, Newsweek has now had to come out and issue a major correction that, gee, after all, that's not really true. Amy Coney Barrett may be part of People of Praise. People of Praise is a charismatic, blend of charismatic Christians and Catholics. And it was started in 1971, and I've talked to you about the Jesus movement that so many, you know, hippies and people on the left found Jesus, and these movements sprung up, and they have had lasting effect, and People of Praise is one of those, and I think she probably is part of that. From people that I know, they say that she is just solid, but it scares, of course, people on the left. I found it really ironic. Richard Grenell, who was the first gay ambassador to Germany and has been the president's defender on national security issues, tweeted this. This was, first of all, tweeted by Ron Charles. Amy Coney Barrett, the judge at the top of Trump's list to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, has said we should always remember that a legal career is but a means to an end, and that end is building the kingdom of God. And that's a quote from the Washington Post. Richard Grinnell comments on that. She says, "This is a basic tenet of Christianity, Ron. Stop the bigotry." From Richard Grinnell. God bless Richard Grinnell. And you're going to be hearing that. If Amy ends up being the nominee, we'll go into that at much more detail. But you can see where the attacks are forming. They never attacked Ruth Bader Ginsburg for being Jewish, did they? Or, you know, it's just becoming very vogue because the society are becoming so godless. And so anyone who takes God seriously is a great threat to them. And I understand that. We are a threat to them. Not we personally, but God himself is a threat. Just the whole notion that there's something beyond themselves, something to whom they must bow the knee besides their own desires or their pet project. And so it is controversial, and it will continue to be. And as people begin to understand who God is and who Jesus is, it's not going to get more popular. It's not going to get more popular, even though it is the key to abundant living and abundant life, both in this life and, of course, eternity and the life after. But that's kind of the lay of the land right now. All right, so I found it interesting yesterday. Obviously, the Supreme Court nomination issue is the most explosive issue right now. I know you've been watching the news. Mitt Romney has said yes, he will support going forward, and that he was the holdout. He was the one people were wondering about. So they've only lost two Republicans. They're support of two Republicans. We still don't know how they'll vote or if they'll vote. But the two women, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska and Susan Collins from Maine, are the only two Republicans now who have said they won't participate in this, that they don't want it to go forward. So now it looks as though Mitch McConnell has the right votes. All right, big deal. All of this is a very big deal, right? So last night on Special Report, and before I even say this, I really love Brett Baer. I do. I just think he's great. So doesn't thrill my heart to criticize him. But I have to say that last night, if you watch Special Report, which is the news hour for Fox News Channel, instead, this is what you heard. As soon as the ding went off the top of the hour, this is what Brett said. Let's listen.
The U.S. has passed a grim milestone, eclipsing the 200,000 mark for deaths due to the coronavirus. That's more than any other country has reported in the world. The race, meantime, is on to get a vaccine. We have team coverage tonight with breaking news on the push for a vaccine, the economic impact of the coronavirus, and the push for more stimulus. And we will take you to one country dealing with a major spike in cases.
All right, so that's how Brett started the news. Now, listen, the news department at Fox has gone left. I've told you that, and Brett is their newsman. So he has to either, dance to the piper or dance somewhere else. I don't know. I don't know any insight on this. I have no inside information. I'm just telling you what I do know. And I don't even know Brett agrees. That's the way the news should have been delivered last night. I don't know, but 200,000, you heard it all day on Fox, Fox News Alert. We've passed this grim, marker. The thing of it is, let me just say, the original model said that we would have 2 million deaths. Like 2 million Americans were going to die. 200,000 divided by, 350 million? I don't know maybe you guys can calculate that for me. Because I think we have 350 million people, something like that now. So 200,000 deaths is just a minuscule. If you compared that to, I haven't. So this is off the top of my head. If you compared it to auto accidents or deaths from flu or deaths from old age, you would find that that's not a huge number for deaths. And yet we've reached the 200,000 marker. The problem is also that the CDC just came out week before last. Anybody remember this? They didn't announce it. You didn't hear a news flash on Fox. It just came out and people reported it who have been watching this stuff. And the CDC actually admitted that of their number then, which was 176,000 deaths, something like that, only 6% really died of COVID. That part they didn't shout from the housetops or do a big news review on it, only 6%, because there were other problems. I'll give you an example, and we've talked about this so much, but you need to hear it again because you're being brainwashed every time, Fox News Alert or whatever news outlet you're looking at. By the way, the death rate then is 0.05%. That's the death rate for COVID. If the 6% are actually COVID deaths. The reason I'm skeptical is because of what Alex Berenson, the New York Times reporter who's been all over this, He says, if you'd like to know how the U.S. has reached 200,000 reported deaths for COVID, the Milwaukee Coroner's Office is a good place to start. It reports the death certificates of COVID cases. Just a few of the most recent. Three in a row. A woman, 90, in renal and heart failure. A man, 84, with prostate cancer, dementia, and heart disease. A man, 88, with heart and renal failure, AFib, diabetes, and Parkinson's. All in the first 20 cases, and all of those deaths were attributed to COVID. Do you wonder why we don't trust this? And I have another story for you. This is out of Sumter County, South Carolina. You may recall that they reported with great fanfare that a child had died of coronavirus. And I think, you know, the left was pretty happy about that, actually, because fine, a child died. That would give them a good reason to keep schools shut down, right? Well, gee, something happened. According to WLTX, DHEC, a Department of Health, reported a pediatric coronavirus death in South Carolina on September 7th in Sumter County. Pediatric in the state of South Carolina is a person under the age of 17 or younger. According to the Sumter County Coroner, Robbie Baker, the coroner's office was not made aware of a child passing. Upon further review with the Department of Health, the county coroner found that the individual, the child that died, that was such great fanfare that this child had died of coronavirus, the child, the individual, was actually in their 80s. And the child death was reported incorrectly. And you ask me why I'm skeptical? That's why I'm skeptical. Yesterday, the president was in, Ohio. And Governor DeWine has been quite the mask Nazi over there. In fact, even as their numbers were static in Ohio, they were not climbing at all. He institutes this really draconian mask rule. So yesterday at the rally, President Trump introduced Governor Mike DeWine, and this is what it sounded like. Clip 7.
We're joined today by a real good friend of mine, somebody that's been with me from the beginning, and I've been with him from the beginning, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. Where's Mike? Where's Mike? What's that all? He's opening up. He's opening. Where's Mike? Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike.
People in Ohio are very upset. Those of you in Ohio probably know that. And the Lieutenant Governor, John Husted, who's been helping DeWine fan the flames of maskism, got up to speak, and this is what it sounded like when Lieutenant Governor John Husted tried to encourage the crowd. Here it is.
But if you go into a grocery store where you got to wear one, all right? Hang on. Just listen up. All right, I get it. But if somebody tells you to take it off, you can at least say that you're trying to save the country by wearing one of President Donald Trump's masks, all right?
All right, so interestingly enough, just one recording. I have another recording that we're not going to have time to play where you can hear the crowd better. And believe me, they were not happy with him. So I'm just saying the only thing that's going to stop this is common sense. And real facts. Oh, they always talk about, the left talks about, you don't believe in the science. Yes, we do. We actually do believe in the science. We just don't believe in fake science. We don't believe in fake numbers. And we believe that people should not be so afraid. I think of people that are not coming to church now. And I just can't help but think about the people that I have met with in China and Russia and other places who have gone to such great lengths to come to worship together, risking arrest, risking finings, risking beatings, and they came anyway. And now, you know, at the risk of, you know, dying 0.003 in the place where I live anyway, they, I can't take that chance. I might get sick if I go to church. I don't understand that. All right, coming up next, Ken Cuccinelli will be our guest. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than 8 decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as 1 Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
A judge in Nevada said that casinos had more rights than churches do.
The culture war rages in America.
We have to be very, very suspicious of this transition in our society that's being forced on us by movements like Black Lives Matter and Antifa.
It's a threat to our families, a threat to our future as a nation.
And so what we see happening in our society is the empowerment of the spiritual darkness that will allow the slaughter of children.
Hosted by Walker Wildman, the upcoming AFA at Home virtual town hall brings vital insight from defenders of the faith, Dr. Richard Land, Star Parker, Abraham Hamilton III, Sandy Rios, the Benham Brothers, and Tim Barton. AFA at Home streams live Thursday, October 8th at 7 p.m. Central at afaaction.net. Register for free at afaaction.net.
This is a spiritual battle, and we all are required to toe the line and take a stand.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. When my new book came out, I got quite a bit of blowback because of the provocative title, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. My book details how the left wants to destroy this country and build a socialist utopia on the ruins. Many accused me of hyperbole, but a recent investigation by Project Veritas verifies my concerns. We have video footage of a Bernie Sanders campaign staffer calling for Trump supporters to be thrown into gulags. The staffer justifies the forced incarceration and re-education because he considers conservatives to be Nazis. Now, I cannot say if Bernie Sanders would condone such behavior, but we're talking about a man who idolized Fidel Castro. The underbelly of socialism is an ugly and dangerous world. That's why we must fight every day for our constitutional rights. Otherwise, one day, we could be reading Culture Jihad from a Bernie Sanders gulag. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In the moments before the show, Sean and I spoke to Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. She says she is all over this. In fact, I believe there may be a criminal investigation already underway of the Bloomberg connected activities in Florida. Chapter 104.061 Florida statute says that it is a third degree felony for someone to either directly or indirectly provide something of value to impact whether or not someone votes. So the question is whether or not paying off someone's fines and legal obligations counts as something of value. And it clearly does. If Michael Bloomberg was offering to pay off people's credit card debts, we would obviously see the value in that. And so when you improve someone's net worth by eliminating their financial liabilities, that is something of value. And then normally it would be very difficult to prove that that was directly linked to impacting whether or not someone was going to vote. But they literally wrote their own admission, Sean, in this document that they used to go fundraise from other people. They said the precise purpose of this fund was to unlock a portion of the black vote in Florida that they believed would go 90 to 95% for Joe Biden. So in this case, I think they've written their own admission. The law is clear. This is something of value. And I am encouraged after my conversation with the attorney general. I hope we have good law enforcement all over the country looking for the cheating and the tricks that these Democrats are going to try in this election, because I'm starting to get the sense they know Donald Trump's going to win it on Election Day.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was Matt Gaetz, congressman from Florida, talking about Michael Bloomberg, and he just explained it. They want to pay off. In Florida, felons are able to vote. Some, I don't know, all of them are. They're able to be reinstated as voters. And so there was another law passed that said only now if they can pay restitution for the things that they've done. So that's what Bloomberg is now trying to do, pay restitution, pay their fines, their costs, so that they can vote again. LeBron James is actually trying to do the same thing in another state. Ken Cuccinelli is with us this morning. He's the acting Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, and one of the things that he oversees is voting security. So, Ken, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Sandy.
Hey, I help us understand, in your particular niche, what part of voter security with the upcoming election are you guys charged with?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because people think in terms of the whole package. And the federal responsibility is first and foremost dealing with cybersecurity, both domestically and internationally. We face off with state actors like China, Russia, Iran, who, by the way, we're much more secure from than we were 4 years ago. They're still doing all their misinformation and trying to make people angry and divide us, but we're much more secure in that front than we were 4 years ago. A lot more cooperation from all 50 states. Yeah, go ahead, Sandy.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I am like because that whole thing about foreign interference in our elections kind of became a cliche with all of the false accusations against the Trump administration. I sort of have a tin ear about foreign interference. I know I shouldn't, but are there real threats?
Alone.
Yeah. Yeah,
no foreign actor has ever changed a vote in this country. And they're not, I'm confident they're not going to do it in 2020 either. So in terms of that kind of a threat, we're in a very good position. What they're doing is the misinformation, disinformation campaigns that are intended to divide us, to undermine our confidence in democracy itself. Not just try to help one side or the other win or lose, but to undermine democracy itself. Well, I'll take Russia, since you hear most about them. Their goal isn't just in the United States. It's to undermine confidence and support for constitutional democracies all around the world, Western democracy. And because they believe that Russia is stronger if we are all weaker and more divided. And so their goal is to divide us and undermine our confidence in America itself. That's their goal. And what they do in the election to achieve that goal is divide and as I said, make people on both sides of any issue angry and drive paranoia and those sorts of things. China does it through formal media entities. I mean, China has much more reach. In part because we have so much interaction with China economically, governmentally, educationally. We don't have any of that with Russia. Russia's a strong but waning nation. China's a strong but growing nation. They're on different trend lines. So very different threats. Within the United States, the states, as the Constitution says, are responsible for the execution of elections, time, nature, time, and place, as it says in the Constitution. And so states are in charge. As we like to say, if you've seen one state's election system, you've seen one state's election system. One of the advantages from a fraud standpoint is because elections are done 50 different ways in 50 different states, you can't just sort of run some fraud program across the country because every state does things differently. I am generally confident of security within the United States. I am a little nervous about some states that are doing new things for the first time in a presidential election like Nevada, which you've probably heard about, they mail everybody the ballots and so forth. There are states that have done that, but they've done it for years, and they have security experience in doing it. But I'm still just conceptually uncomfortable with mailing out a bunch of ballots where nobody had to request them. That's a little different than what most of us are used to around the country. That's my main point of concern.
Mine too. And we do talk about that frequently, and I'm glad you brought that up again. It's like people need to mail, vote in person. Vote in person, for heaven's sake, and watch your own ballot go into that slot. That's the only safe way to do this.
One more thing, Sandy. I mean, for those of us who are concerned about security, there's something everybody listening to you and me can do on security. Go be a poll worker. And I don't mean for a campaign. I mean go be someone who runs the election. Almost all states are still taking in people, and I was going to say volunteers, but they pay you. They'll pay you, like $100 or something, and it'll be a long day. But you go count the ballots. You go run the election. It's citizens who step up and do this stuff. So there are opportunities for that all over the country. If everybody listening to you would go be an election worker, we wouldn't have to worry about the vote count in those precincts, right? And that's thousands and thousands and thousands. So that's the way to solve the security problem, is to actually participate on the other side of the doors. Go count the vote yourself.
My listeners are saying right now, Ken, that you sound a lot like Sandy Rios, because I've been preaching that. I have been preaching that, and a lot of our listeners are doing this.
She is so smart, I'm telling you.
She really is. It's just amazing. All right, I want to switch over to something that I know really will make your heart beat a little faster, which is something you have to live with day and night, you guys, in Homeland Security, and it's all the violence around the country. And Seattle yesterday, of course, mm-hmm. overrode the mayor's veto of police cuts. They're cutting the police by 100 officers. They're cutting their budget by around $3 million. And they've also appointed a convicted pimp. They're paying him, $12,000 a month? $12,500 a month to kind of help them with the alternatives to policing. There's more to say about that story, but it really is lawlessness. Where are we with that? I know that the Justice Department has threatened now to bring lawsuits against some of these mayors. But what are your thoughts, and what's the update on all of that, Ken?
Well, Seattle is one of those three cities, with Portland and New York, that Attorney General Barr determined were anarchist cities by their measures, and puts them in a unique class. And, this is political virtue signaling on steroids at the expense of public safety. And it's not like Seattle's a grand city anymore. You go through Seattle, and there's large swaths of it that are just a mess now. And the people who don't agree with you and me politically are far left, but there are lots of them that say that. This is not even open to question. And it's these kinds of crazy policies that make it a miserable place to live, make it a haven for anarchists, and repetitive crime and violence. I mean, the joke in Seattle is how many people have been arrested more, I kid you not, than 100 times. And you can see interviews with them on the internet. They arrest them, they turn them loose, arrest them, turn them loose, arrest them, turn them loose. There's no accountability. And so so crime runs amok, basically. And DHS, our role, we protect federal facilities. You saw that in Portland all summer. We were there. We had over 240 officer injuries during that time. Those are stalwart law enforcement officers standing their ground and taking the hits for the benefit of the peace of that community, despite the lack of support from the mayor, who was also the police commissioner there, and their city council and their governor. Governor Brown has over 7,800 National Guardsmen available to her. You know how many she used this summer? Zero. And when President Trump called Governor Evers in Wisconsin when Kenosha lit up. He was pushing him hard to take National Guard, including from other states, to restore peace in Kenosha. And Governor Evers rejected that, and that night people were killed in Kenosha.
Yes.
And Governor Evers had a change of mind, I won't say heart, but of mind, and he agreed with the president. President got National Guardsmen in from multiple other states, and lo and behold, what happened? Peace. Peace is what happened. And peace is what this president wants. He's a very rough-talking, tough-on-crime president, but ultimately, it's to achieve peace. That's what he's after, and that's what we do at the Department of Homeland Security as best we can. We always have to operate within our legal limits. We can't just go police communities. We don't have authority to do that. We have to have particular federal jurisdiction. Same with DOJ. But where cities and states will cooperate with us, we have a lot more freedom to operate and help them achieve the peace that their communities deserve.
Hey, Ken, I know this could be perceived as a political question, and you're talking to me in your capacity with the government, but I really want to know, just fact-based, If Joe Biden gets elected and Kamala Harris, what would you expect to happen on the street? Seriously, what would be the natural outcome of that?
Well, I can only deal with it at a policy level, but based on what they have said, I would expect you to not see federal law enforcement used to help keep the peace in the aggressive manner President Trump is using us for. Which just allows more violence to linger. I mean, the way this goes is violence begets violence. I suspect that when other people come out to fight back, because that's part of what happened in Kenosha. You remember that 17-year-old?
Oh, yes.
His stated reason for going out was that people weren't protecting these citizen Americans, and he was going to go help protect them. You know, that's a very American attitude, frankly.
Yes.
And you'll see that all over the country. But when it isn't leftist rioting and looting, then you'll, I suspect, see them respond and use the bully pulpit and law enforcement. It'll be very politically selective. President Trump doesn't care who's committing violence. He wants it to stop. Mm-hmm. That is not the impression I get with politicians on the left.
Okay, so opposite question. If President Trump is reelected, what more can you guys do to secure the homeland?
Well, I'm actually testifying before the Senate tomorrow on threats to the homeland. And one of the things I'm going to talk about, two of the things I'm going to talk about where we need Congress's help are countering drone threats. We really have no authority to do much of anything worthwhile in that space except watch them fly into things. And that doesn't help anyone very much. And the other is TOX, the transnational organized crime. Primarily, we're referring to Mexican drug trafficking cartels here. You know, they're supplying the drugs that are killing over 70,000 Americans a year. Now, Americans are complicit in that, but they are literally manufacturing every major drug except cocaine now in Mexico. They get the precursors from China. They're running manufacturing facilities, and the only exception being cocaine, which they are now in control by and large of the shipment up from South America. So this is a major threat to American security that is we don't have enough tools to deal with. You don't prosecute your way out of a problem like that. They control parts of Mexico, and you know, that's a pretty amazing thing to say. Here's a sovereign nation that doesn't control all of its own territory because that's just how powerful these drug cartels are.
Wow.
And
Ken,
we need more tools to face off with them.
Yep. Well, you know what? Let me just say that one of the themes I've been hitting the last few days is the really fine people the president has placed around him, and you're one of them, Ken. So thankful that you're there. Ken Cuccinelli, Acting Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security for all of us. And so, Ken, take care, and we'll look forward to that testimony tomorrow before the Senate. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure. Have a great day, Sandy.
All right, you too. Okay, bye-bye. All right, coming up, lots of really interesting different stories that I wanted to share with you, so we're going to do it. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This so-called whistleblower is not a whistleblower because he does not have first-hand knowledge of anything regarding President Trump. The Intelligence Community Inspector General's office, they admitted that they changed the form to allow this fake whistleblower to fill out an application.
Exposing Washington, each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Whitestone Inn is, as the founders envisioned, a place of sanctuary for people in ministry.
Randall Murphy, editor of the AFA Journal.
Beautiful setting, just a presence, a sense of God's great creation.
Look for the article Whitestone Inn, Sanctuary for the Minister's Soul in the September edition of the AFA Journal, the official publication of the American Family Association. Visit afajournal.org.
He who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. As President Trump quickly moves ahead to nominate a replacement for the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Democrats had hoped to halt the process by convincing at least four Republicans that Trump's nominee should not even receive a vote before the election. Those hopes likely took a mortal blow Tuesday when Utah Senator Mitt Romney announced that he is not opposed to confirming a nominee in an election year and that he would vote on Trump's replacement based upon their qualifications. If this holds, the Senate will confirm the president's nominee before the November election.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Democrats have been yammering on about how inappropriate it is for President Trump to nominate a replacement Supreme Court justice in an election year. But the Constitution says voters choose the president, and the president chooses Supreme Court justices. As RBG herself said, the president does not cease being president in his fourth year. He has the right and responsibility to nominate Ginsburg's replacement. The process must be completed by November 3. Democrats and their 600 lawyers will challenge every result they don't like, and so the selection will wind up at the Supreme Court. The court is split 4-4, and you can't settle this issue with a tie vote. So, Mr. President, full steam ahead to nominate RBG's replacement. The founders wouldn't have it any other way.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo commendably called attention to the Chinese Communist Party's brutal oppression of Christians and other people of faith. He decried as well the Han supremacism, which really is systemic racism, that has long enslaved the captive nations of East Turkestan, Southern Mongolia, Tibet, and Manchuria. It's also animating Xi Jinping's efforts to enslave many more countries via his Belt and Road Initiative. Such oppression is being greatly enabled by the CCP's social credit system, a comprehensive security state surveillance capability that surpasses Orwell's worst nightmares. Incredibly, Ant Technology Group, which helped build this enabler of totalitarianism, is about to be infused with $30 to $40 billion thanks to Beijing's bankers on Wall Street through an upcoming initial public offering in Hong Kong and Shanghai. Americans must stop funding our enemy and making it more dangerous. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, I'll tell you something fun. I know we all don't like wearing them. Maybe
But listen, I'm sure if you have a white mask and a Sharpie, you can even do this. You can just write the president's name on it.
All right, that's enough of that. That's Lieutenant Governor, who's dad, from Ohio, speaking to that crowd yesterday. It's kind of I played a bit of that earlier. They're booing while he's trying to show them how to wear this mask with a MAGA on it or President Trump on it. I'm not sure what it said exactly. And they're booing. And they booed when President Trump introduced Governor Mike DeWine, who has instilled this draconian mask rule for people of Ohio. And they're not happy about this. So interestingly enough, on MSNBC, John Heilman was appearing, and in response to that incident in Dayton, where the people booed Governor DeWine and they booed the lieutenant governor over the use of masks, this was his comment about that. I want you to hear it. Clip six.
When we clipped that video and put it up at the recount, it went rapidly viral. Like, you know, it ran into vast numbers. It went crazy in social media. And someone commented, the quote was, "Nice death cult you got there, GOP." And that really is, I mean, this is the other thing. It goes back to another, like, so the one of the core, I mean, it really does. I'm using a phrase like death cult about one of the great American political parties in our nation's history. To say that we would have once seemed hyperbolic, but it increasingly does feel like the Republican Party has become a death cult, and it's all about Donald Trump. And I do think, again, one of the things that sets Trump apart, like, what are the things that set Trump apart from every other president? The pathology of the lying, the cruelty, the not taking this, you know, not making the virus central when any other president of any party that we've ever experienced in our lifetimes would have made the virus front and center. But the other thing that he's done on every aspect of policy and politics since day one, he has always sought to divide the country rather than unite the country. And he alone turned the question of masks into a culture war issue. It is now a profound culture war in America, the war between those who believe that masks will save us or will at least help to save us, and those who think that they are an encroachment on our individual liberty. That group, that latter group, are in the thrall of Donald Trump, despite all available medical evidence that mask would be the thing that would do the most to contain the virus. And it does increasingly, again, you join that cult. It's the cult of personality, but it's also, in this case, because of the consequences, it is literally a death cult. And that is what you saw on display in that clip. You saw the death cult roar.
That was the death cult roaring. Thank you, John. The death cult, because Republicans have a problem with wearing masks. And of course, according to John, not all Republicans do. Some are happy to wear masks. I'm one who is not happy to wear a mask, I freely admit. But I don't think I'm a part of a death cult, because I actually think that the whole notion that you can wear a mask and be safe from it is just not true. Unless you're a doctor and you've got a very special mask and you're around sick people all the time, or you're in the presence of people on chemotherapy or who have weak immunities and you're going to see them, then I think it's perfectly appropriate to wear one. But to wear one everywhere all the time on the outside chance that a few of us might get sick, I'm not in favor. I think it's ridiculous. So it's more than what he just said. However, let's go back to the death cult thing. Now, how many people have died in this country since what? January? It's not quite a year yet. I believe we, you know, had bells and whistles go off yesterday when we reached the terrible $200,000 mark. Look, I sound like I'm mocking people's deaths. I'm not. I'm mocking the lies and the deceit and the distortion of numbers. Okay, so that's what my mockery is all about. Certainly, I would not mock the death of anyone. But I'm just saying, proportionately, it's just not what they're saying. You know why I would say that? Let's see. Because I just asked Adam to look this up. Do you know how many babies have been aborted in this country just this year? You know, so we have COVID deaths. We have 200. The first number wasn't worldwide, was it? The 31 million? That's worldwide. Okay. Then I don't know what I thought that was the American number, so it's less. But I can tell you it's millions. Millions of babies have been aborted in this country this calendar year. And who are the champions of killing innocent people? Innocent babies in the womb. Who are the champions? Just asking. I bet John Heilman is a champion. I bet, I know all Democrats are champions. There was one pro-life Democrat. He was from Chicago. I used to interview him and support him, and they finally booted him out. There are no, the death cult certainly rides in the Democratic Party. This whole notion of letting people die or not giving full care when you get old. I remember Barack Obama in an exchange with a woman, I think from New Hampshire, who was in her 90s. Her daughter was speaking on her behalf at a town hall when he was running for president. And she was talking about how her mother had had a pacemaker, and her mother was so healthy otherwise, very vivacious and really bright. And so she'd gotten the pacemaker, and it was just a miracle how improved her life. And Barack Obama's response was, well, maybe in the future that won't be possible, and maybe she'll just have to take a pill. That's what he said. Because, you see, with Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, it was going to be only the young and strong and worthy of keeping alive who would get the best treatment. And that's just a fact. So let's talk about who the death cult is. All right, so Nancy Pelosi, you know, has her own strong feelings about how horrible the Republican Party is, especially over the appointment of the Supreme Court Justice after the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So she let it all hang out yesterday. Let's listen, clip five.
The Republicans decided that they would be disrespectful and move ahead that very night by saying that they were going to have a vote on her replacement. Let's remember, this is a lifetime appointment, somebody who could be there for 30 years. It's important to uphold the Constitution of the United States. It should be done with care, whoever the president is. So the hypocrisy of the Republicans on this is really not important in people's daily lives, but it is indicative that they don't keep their word. And this appointment, the reason the president and Leader McConnell are moving forward so quickly is because they want to overturn the Affordable Care Act. And when people understand, and they do, what this means in their lives, no more benefit of the pre-existing condition, no more having your children be on your policy until 26 years old, no more having Medicaid expanded to cover long-term health care and the needs of our children with pre-existing conditions, and returning to a time where being a woman is a pre-existing medical condition. The people know that, and that's why the Republicans are rushing. They want to get it done so they can overturn the Affordable Care Act. And you know what? They're going to be paying this price for elections to come. Elections to come. Everyone's looking at what makes a difference in these senatorial races. We'll see. But what they don't really understand is they're going to see 2018 again and again and again in terms of defeats in the Congress.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that, won't we? Because I see a lot of voting blocks in this country who have traditionally voted Democrat, including Hispanic and Black votes, shifting. And I think once they really understand the platform of the Democratic Party, which is really, talk about a death cult, it is that, trying to remove God from their party completely, embracing abortion for all 9 months for any reason, it's ghastly, it really is. So Nancy can boast all she wants. I want to just make a couple of points. Because it is a lifetime appointment, that is exactly why the Republicans have to move ahead with this. And because constitutionally they're supposed to move ahead with this. And because it doesn't really matter. In terms of numbers, we say, you know, President Trump should not appoint because the election's coming up. The next president should, and they're hoping it's Biden. But see, presidents only come and go. They serve 4 or 8 years. The Supreme Court justice serves for life. So right now, as of this day, President Trump is a duly elected president. He is constitutionally required to move ahead with this, not to wait for another president to appoint a lifetime appointment. That next president will be gone in a flash, too, whoever it is, if it's President Trump or if it's Joe Biden. So the point is the Supreme Court justice that's been appointed will be there for a lifetime. So it makes no sense proportionately to wait, makes no sense whatsoever, and the Republicans have the power right now, and they should use it. And that's politics. She said that should be done with care. I mean, like the Kavanaugh hearing. Well, like that one was done with care, Mrs. Pelosi. And then she talks about how the Democrats want to, the Republicans are rushing because they want to overturn the ACA, the affordable, whatever it's called, Obamacare. And here's the thing, that's just one case before the Supreme Court. And yes, I think, ironically, Ken Cuccinelli was just our guest. It was because of Ken's brainstorming with attorneys general. He was the former attorney general of Virginia, that this whole case has worked its way through the courts. And it was something that Ken Cuccinelli actually brainstormed, was how to do away with the Affordable Care Act. And thank God for that, because there's so many bad things about it. And I want to give you an illustration of one. Yesterday, I was trying to make an arrangement to get a follow-up. This is complicated, so I'll try to make it simple. I had the beginning of a series of vaccines, and I had one a couple of months ago, and I'm supposed to have the second one soon, but I'm in a different place than where I got that first one. That was the Mayo Clinic. You know I go there. I tell you every year. I go to Minneapolis. But when I inquired about how to get the second one, I was told just I could go to Walgreens. Just go to Walgreens. They've got a walk-in clinic, and they can find online your vaccine record. I said, what? I can go to Walgreens, any Walgreens, and they can look my name up and find what vaccines and shots that I have had through the years? Oh, yes, oh, yes. I said, that is disturbing. You've got to be kidding me. Any person can find out, you know, think about the implications of that. Even as we think about the COVID vaccine or anything else that comes out, the left wants to control you. They want to control you by controlling your medical records, knowledge of your medical care. We know that. Remember, part of the Affordable Care Act was, you know, finding out if you had a gun at home. So nothing to do with medicine. It was an insidious way. If you can control a person's health care, and if you have access to their records, you can control them completely. You think some people might get treatments and some people might not, according to their records? Do you think, for instance, with the vaccine, if the left takes over and there is a COVID vaccine, do you think for a minute, I know because I've read this, that there's this intention that, you know, if you don't get that vaccine, you might not be able to go to school, get a job. Why don't fill in the blank? And now you can go to Walgreens and find out. They can find out if you've had the vaccine or not. It's that publicly available. If there's any reason to overthrow this whole notion, now the Affordable Care Act, I'm sure wouldn't cancel that out, but that's the kind of thing that's in it. And so that's the passion with which certainly people like me would say, get rid of it, get rid of it. Let's let the private sector develop these healthcare systems that people can afford. They can choose how much coverage they want, how little coverage. They can take their own risks, make their own decisions. There is a way to do this besides giving the government control of all your information and your health care. That's what we don't want, and we must eradicate it. Okay, there's a couple more things here. Remember last week on Overtime, Newt Gingrich had an interesting exchange with Harris Faulkner and some of the team there. I want you to hear it again. This is clip 14.
The number one problem in almost all these cities is George Soros elected left-wing, anti-police, pro-criminal district attorneys who refuse to keep people locked up. Just yesterday, they put somebody back on the street who's wanted for two different murders in New York City. You cannot solve this problem. And both Harris and Biden have talked very proudly about what they call progressive district attorneys. Progressive district attorneys are anti-police, pro-criminal, and overwhelmingly elected with George Soros' money. And they're a major cause of the violence we're seeing, because they keep putting the violent criminals back on the street.
I'm not sure we need to bring George Soros into this. I was going to say you'd get the last word, Speaker.
He paid for it. I mean, why can't we discuss the fact that millions of dollars he spent?
I agree with Melissa. George Soros doesn't need to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, so remember that. Okay, there's more to it. He was stunned. And interestingly enough, Tucker Carlson last night took it on head on, which is he restated what we know. George Soros, I think, spent $13 million last year getting these leftist prosecutors in these cities that are letting these criminals go left and right. And so Tucker took it on bravely. I was going to play that clip for you, too, but isn't that something? All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.